Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Welcome, Moors, to Moorish Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, and tonight's broadcast is the Trayvon Martin murder and what killed him. We're going to address some things tonight, ladies and gentlemen, involving this particular murder and other murders that's been occurring throughout our history as people of Moorish descent in the Americas. We're going to deal with what is the major cause for the Trayvon Martin and other murders of people of African descent, both male and female, across the United States. What should people of African descent, Moorish descent, do immediately each time it happens in America? What is the true meaning of justice? Is there a definition for justice? Is there a system in place to murder our children in cold blood? And if it is, what should we do about it right now? Okay, so now these are the questions that we're going to deal with this evening. And before we get started, ladies and gentlemen, let me say that we are offering our free article this evening. For those of you who are tuning in to this broadcast for the very first time, if you can email me at tahaka99@yahoo.com. That's tahaka99@yahoo.com, and we will get this stuff to you as an email attachment. The Commerce Game and How to Play and the 14th Amendment Exposed. We'll rush that to you as soon as possible. Just send me an email to talker99@yahoo.com and we'll get that to you. Also, it is very, very important. We have created one of the most comprehensive libraries inside the United States. Now, what that means to you is this. Imagine being able to sit home in the privacy of your own home and at any given point in time that you want. If you work 5 days a week and you're off two, it's an opportunity for you to get in there. If you work in the morning and you're off in at night, you don't go back to the next morning, there's an opportunity for you to get in there. You can study about your own culture. You can access your estate. You can use your estate. You can learn everything about contract law. You can learn everything about debtors and creditors. You can learn everything about the Commerce Game. You can learn everything about your culture. You can learn about the Moorish American national government, your identity, your sovereignty, your political and legal status. All of this information is put there for you. If you have children in your home, they have science projects. They're going through it in their history class, and their teachers are trying to teach them things that is not lining up with what they have understood. Well, what we have laid open in the bare naked facts in this library is an opportunity for them to not only tell them their position, but also bring in documentation that they have printed out and provide them with proof. The authors and editors and all this information is there for them to utilize to expose their position. So there can be no misunderstanding because we have the facts. All this information is available to you in Tahaka's library. We make that available to you, and you just simply contact me for that at area code 904-303-9061, and we will get that to you, okay? That's Tahaka's Library, the most comprehensive libraries in the United States and abroad. We have brothers that have contacted me as far as Japan, Afghanistan, and other countries around the world, not to mention all of the brothers and sisters that have gained access to this particular library inside the United States. It is very, very comprehensive. There's tons and tons of information there on your story. This was designed for people of Moorish and African descent only. This is yours. This was created for you so that you will be able, and your children and your mother and your father and your sister and your brothers, your cousins, your uncles, your aunt will be able to have something that they can put down on the table and back up any claims that they may have. If there's no evidence, there's no argument. So what we have done is put all the facts in one place. You can gain access to this thing by contacting me at area code 904-303-9061, and we'll get that to you, okay? One of the most comprehensive libraries inside the United States. You want to know about all of your historical figures in the Americas? They're right there. What about your African figures? What about great leaders of ancient Kemet? What about your history in this hemisphere? What about the ancient Moors in the Americas? What about the Yamasee, the Washitas, all of this stuff is in this library, and we make it available for you right here, and you simply contact me to gain access to that. So don't forget, we're offering our free article, The 14th Amendment Exposed, The Commerce Game, and How to Play, and you access that by simply contacting me at tahaka99@yahoo.com, and we get that to you, okay? Now, we're going to get down in this thing, and what I'm going to do this evening, ladies and gentlemen, is I want to draw attention before we get into the broadcast and begin to expose this information. We're going to bring you some feed by a very distinguished gentleman called Neely Fuller, and he is the one that wrote the compensatory code and told us about racism and what it is and how it is comprised and all that, and you're going to hear from him this evening. But before we get into that, I want to make mention one more time for those of you who are new to this thing and you're trying to figure out a way to deal with your nationality, your sovereignty. You got people telling you that, well, you need to be nationalized. You need to file this document. You need to file that document. Well, before you do any of that, go ahead and contact me, Tahaka, at 904-303-9061, and we're going to try to do everything in our power to keep you from jumping through all these unnecessary hoops because you don't need all of that. We're going to direct you and guide you in the right way to go, and we're going to introduce you to the thing that is will guide you in the right way and put you in the right path, so that not only will you be able to deal with your nationality and your sovereignty and understand about your culture and your story, but you will also be able to deal with your immediate circumstances. We got people who have problems with bill collectors. We have people who are dealing with the courts. We have people who are about to be evicted from their homes and all of this stuff. So what we have done is we have devised some help for you. But I need you to contact me, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, at area code 904-303-9061, and we'll get on that and we'll show you how to handle these situations. Now, also, for those of you who are on the social sites, if you're on Dig and MySpace, Black Planet, and all of these different places, don't hesitate to connect with me. If you're on Facebook, now, I've been blocked off of Facebook. I'm going to tell you that right now. I post so much information, and they told me that they are going to have to ban me for 30 days because I was befriending people that I didn't know. Well, I never understood that one because I'm under the impression the only way you get to know somebody is you make an effort. And because I made the effort, I'm banned because they say, well, you are doing this, and this is against company policy. So what that tells me is if I don't know someone, then I have no business knowing them. Otherwise, I'll be punished for trying to get to know them. So if you would be kind enough to send me your friend request, and I will go ahead and grant it. That'll give you access to my wall. That'll give you access to upcoming broadcasts and different articles and stuff for your educational purposes and needs that I put there for you. So if you're on Facebook, you're on Dig, you're on MySpace, Black Planet, Black Talk Radio, it doesn't matter where you are, Stumble Upon, any of that, the Drop Squad, any of that, hit me up, and we will make it possible for us to be friends, regardless of the fact that other people have policies in place to make sure that you stay separate from each other so you cannot aid one another and support one another. So if you own MySpace, go ahead and send me your friend request. If you're on Facebook, send me a friend request. Send it to Tahaka Amana L. Bay. That's T-A-R-H-A-K-A, and then Amana, A-M-A-A-N-A, and then L. Bay, E-L, and then B-E-Y, and I will go ahead and grant your friend request, and that'll give you access to our world where this information is being placed. First of all, I'm going to go into our first little segment, and we're going to hear from Dr. Neely Fuller, and after that, we're going to give some breakdowns on some things, and also want to make mention of the your birth certificate and your executive estate. I'm going to shed some new light on that information, too, as well, because it's very, very important for us to use that, and I want to bring that information to the light again, one more time. Okay, so if you all would just hold tight, we will get to that information. Okay,
from the basic royal concept that there are certain people who should be royal, and at one time it was might have been presumably just among white people themselves, but when they came in contact with non-white people, then the old royal system switched over to a color system, which is much more efficient, much more dynamic, and has proven to be the greatest political system and the greatest religious system in the known universe. It's the most powerful. Mm-hmm. It's an idea that has set off all kinds of ramifications among the body politic of the people in the known universe.
Let's talk about the first area of the nine concepts that you mentioned, which is it education, entertainment, labor law, politics, religion, sex, and war. Can we walk through each one of those briefly so we can get an idea?
Well, economics means that the use of time and energy.
Okay.
And the racists, when they looked around at the people that they classified as non-white, they decided, well, one thing, we will have domination over the way that they use their time and energy. And all of these areas of activity are interrelated.
Mm-hmm.
Economics is interrelated with education. Education is interrelated with entertainment. Entertainment is interrelated with labor, law, politics, religion, mm-hmm. sex, war. All of these nine areas are interactive. So if you're a white supremacist, in order to really be supreme, you have to get control over everything that people do in all of these nine areas if these people are classified as non-white. And, of course, being a supremacist, the supremacist always does the classifying, not the victims. The victims cannot classify themselves without the approval of the white supremacists.
So they decide that you're black.
Sure. Just like a term that you hear now in popular parlance is the term biracial.
Yes.
Or multiracial.
Mm-hmm.
Or multicultural. Now, these are terms that the victims of racism will have to pick through and try to. They are given this selective chart where they can determine if they are biracial and to what degree of biracialism, whatever that's supposed to mean, what degree of colorism, whatever that's supposed to mean.
Yeah, because I understand that even coming up on, not yet, but coming up on the census forms, they're going to have different categories. I mean, it's not going to be just black, white, non-white, other anymore. It's going to be biracial and, you know, that kind of thing. How do you think that's going to affect?
More confusion. See, the basic reason, the basic tool of the races is deceit.
Yes.
So therefore, deceit is supposed to produce confusion. The more confusion you have, the more deception you have among the victims. Now, the racists will not be deceived.
Mm-hmm.
The white supremacists will be able to function as white people. That will still be their classification. The classification will be white. That's the dominant classification. All of the so-called biracial classifications will be more confusion. And a hypothetical situation would be that you would have then non-white people going into an employment office making out forms where they will try to find out whether they are part Indian, part Portuguese, part semi-this and by that, and multa this and multa that. And it will take them all day probably to make out their form. Anyone who is classified as white will come in and maybe in a few minutes make out their applications and leave. The non-white people will still be there at closing time trying to figure out who they are and where they fit into the subordinate, and I underline subordinate, categories.
So it's basically going to cause a lot of confusion for a lot of people. For a lot of people who consider themselves to be multiracial.
This is why it's important to always watch the words that are produced under the system of white supremacy. Any type of words that are introduced into the language, such as multiracialism, multiculturalism, biracialism. Take the term multiculturalism.
Mm-hmm.
Culture is what you do. That's all it is. Whatever people do in any one or more than nine areas of activity is the culture of that person at the time that the person is doing it, whatever it is that the person is doing. There's nothing mysterious about culture. The victims of white supremacy have a victimization culture all over the world.
We have to take a break right here. It's Danny Queen. We're speaking with Mr. Neely Fuller Jr., and we're going to be back shortly.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that was Dr. Neely Fuller. And he's laid some very, very important information out for us to understand. But before I go over to some more information, I see we have someone with the hand raised. I'm going to open up this line and see if we can touch that, and then we'll get on into the broadcast. Area code 414-25265. Could you tell us who you are and where you're calling from and what's your question?
Okay, hi, this is Marion. I'm calling from Wisconsin, and I don't have a comment. I would just comment on what the brother was saying on that table about the whole idea of introducing new languages and new words. And I just recently, maybe no more than a month ago, maybe 2 months now, I was applying for a position, and this company gave me a application form, and it had me go through. You couldn't bypass it. It had you go through because it was a government agency, and it had you go through, and it began to specify just as the brother was speaking, exactly, he was saying, you know, are you white, as in from Northern Africa, from Turkey, from Germany and Asia? Are you black, with African descent from Central and Sub-Saharan. So it got so Pacific. Are you Asian from the South Pacific and from Lower Asia, meaning Vietnam, Korea? And I said to myself, I had never seen such a thing.
Well, how do you expect me to discriminate against you if I don't know exactly who I'm finna get ready to do it to?
Exactly. And that's what I said to him. Needless to say, I didn't finish the application. I passed it up. I said, there's no way I'm going to be involved with something of this magnitude, because what it's going to do is going to continue to divide and try to put oppression. And I'm not about that. I'm being liberated. I'm not trying to be subjected to, you know, oppression on any level, you know, or captivity on any level. And then, as I said, you know, we have to remember that. And that's what they're doing. They're sitting up. This is a small pocket of individuals that are implementing this mess. And they got us so distracted by all these little sidebar conversations. And like you said, we're missing the main point. Now the census is going to have this here? Oh, come on. They already are aware of exactly what they're doing. They are implementing their plan. It's time for us to implement our plan. And that plan has to be in direct response, not reaction, to what it is they're doing.
Okay. Well, sister, I have to agree with you and a great deal of respect of what you're saying. That's absolutely correct. There are a lot of us that's going out and applying for jobs and stuff of this nature. But I want to also add that we need to also do some investigation on the background of this country and the our historical references involving this country and the history involving this country. Happen to know that prior to the 19th century, 95% of the people inside the United States that were being called Americans were self-employed. But immediately after close of the 20th century, we have 95% of people in this country working for 5%. And
yes,
all
sir.
References and all information in regards to the media that's being broadcast to us is more jobs. Nobody
mm-hmm.
is saying anything about go to school, get a good education, so you can create your own company or own your own company. That's non-existent.
Yes,
you don't hear that. Our parents are teaching their children to go to school, get a good education, so I'll send you to college so you can get a career. And you can have a career, and you can work for somebody else, and all this
yes,
stuff.
Sir.
But we are all born, and there's nobody on earth like us. We are the most creative people on the planet.
Now,
we
that's
create
true.
Our own opportunities. We can make our own breaks, but we have to come into the knowledge of ourselves. We have to have background information on our culture. We have to look at what our people did yesterday and realize that if they did it then, we can do it again. And
stop following somebody
else's outline for the way we ought to be. Go ahead, sister.
Yes, sir. I was saying you're exactly right, because that's one of the things I talk about all the time. I say it's one thing to know, okay, once you tell me about the atrocities and this whole idea that's a new kind of slavery and we're being bombarded by the oppression, okay, let's look at our own history. First of all, we took care of each other. We took men and women, worked together. Our communities, like you said, we were building up. We always had a plan on how to stay outside and how to create and build. And when you look, like you said, look inwardly at everything we are endowed with naturally. We are naturally going to be able to be creators and manifestors of whatever we need to have. I agree 100%. Propaganda telling you job, job, job. I was speaking with my children. I have a hard time when my son tells me, Mama, I'm out here. I made my own business. I'm making $7,000 a month selling these, you know, creating my product and selling it. And then why should I go to school and come out and I owe $100,000 in school loan? That's ludicrous. It's ludicrous. And the education system is so frivolous, it's not even teaching our children the basic principles and rights that we need to have. Why? Because they're teaching them how to just become workers and reactors to whatever, like you said, whatever the media puts out there, that 5%, that's how they're going to maintain it. They get you all geeked up and tell you the economy is in a recession. Now the economy is reviving. People go out and become consumers. And I constantly tell black folks on a regular basis, we need to stop being a consumer. When we came out of slavery, historically, the first thing we did was begin to try to wear our hair, buy their clothes, activate, implement exactly the way they. How are we going to take the very people who we raised their children, who we showed them the way, how are we going to take them, and now we're going to let them teach us how to be civilized, how to be creative, how to be intellectual, how to manifest a society? It's ludicrous. It makes no sense to me.
Well,
if we don't know our history, I'm telling you, that's one thing I learned a long time ago. We are going to repeat the devastation that occurs. That's why our children are being snatched up and being harmed. Our communities are breaking down. Our families are breaking down because we have forgotten that we always had unity. We always had each other. We've got to quit letting these folks come in our community. But I thank you, brother, for letting me get my piece out today. I appreciate it. I'm getting out the line so someone else can join you. And you can continue teaching
them. I'm glad you gathered that. It needed to be said. Because I know one thing I know for a fact. You know, when I was in high school, and this is a true story, I call myself being an artist. I mean, you talking about somebody that could draw? I could draw. I could draw anything and anybody. I drew a woman one time, and she was beautiful. I gave her the picture of her that I drew, and she said, "Oh, you sure can draw." Later on, she had two children from it. But then I had a brother that could outdraw me. My brother, he could outdraw me. But then there was another brother in our town. This brother here, he was a twin. It was two of them. One of them was a master sculptor, and the other one could draw. And he put me and my brother both to shame. We couldn't even get together as a team, and I draw this man here. I did not like him. But I had no reason not to like him, and every time I seen his work, I had to praise it, but I still did not like it. I learned something. I learned that our people are naturally talented. All you have to do, if your back is up against the wall, use your head and start thinking, because we already been given talent. You can create your own talent. Ask the Creator for what you want. He'll give it to you. Lay down and go to sleep. He'll show you in a dream. You say, "Well, I know how to do that." And then get up and go to work and start doing it. It'll pay off for you. But we being programmed to believe that we have to follow someone else's dictation. I was on the phone earlier today, and a brother made mention of something that was going on up north about somebody that had been killed. I said, he said, "Man, it's all over the media. You ain't heard about it?" I said, "No. We ain't heard about that down here." I said, "You have to understand that what they do with the media is they own the media. They own archaeology and anthropology. And what they're doing is they're giving us their interpretation and covering up what we really need to know." I said, "The information that they getting y'all up there, it may not even come here. There are movies that came out that we never knew existed."
Mm-hmm.
I got a brother that's going, he up north right now. He just called me on the phone. He said, "Man, I got some stuff that came out in the 60s that you ain't never seen." And he called off to him. I said, "I never seen that." He said, "I'm bringing it down here to you." I said, "Okay." Mm-hmm. But if we depended on somebody else to give us the truth, instead of doing our own investigation and gathering our own facts and depending on our own ancestors and our own intelligence, instead of relying on somebody else, we always be stuck. We always going to be in the dependent mode. Now, I appreciate you, sister, from coming on. But I'm going to move on here because I can talk about this right here all night. But we are on the night about the young man, Trayvon Martin, and how to kill him down there. And what I want to do is I want to relate some stories and stuff that happened here. And what I have been taught, because I'm a different breed of animal. I didn't a lot of stuff that I see going on now. I don't understand. I can't relate to it. Sometimes I feel like I'm just a dinosaur. I feel like I'm extinct because when the men that I was raised up with, this kind of stuff right here, they nothing like that. No, sir. Mm-hmm. I know men that we give you one story. And there's a brother down here, and I ain't going to call his name, and everybody down here know who I'm talking about. I'm going to just say his first name, Johnny. All right? Johnny had two sisters. Both of them were twins. And you had a brother inside the school, his name was Big Jones. Big Jones liked one of them girls, because when we was going to school, girls, they were big girls. They were grown women. And he wanted to date one of the girls. The girl said, I don't like you, old man. He got married. He slapped that girl. And all the teachers in the school found out about it. They would have told him, Jones, you know who you slapped? Don't you know that Johnny fool? I don't know, man. I don't care nothing about it. Well, you finna find out. We finna go. Next thing you know, here come the hood with Johnny leading the pack. They locked the entire school, put chains on the door, big old chains, and locked it up. And they said, Jones, you going to go out there and face him? Jones seen him. Jones said, I ain't going out there. Johnny come out there. Johnny tried to snatch the doors open with the chains on them. Bending steel and snatching bars off the door and everything, trying to get in there. Couldn't get in. So somebody said, well, Johnny, that's his car right there. He had a Volkswagen, brand new Volkswagen. Johnny walked over to the Volkswagen and picked it up off the ground and turned it over by itself. Jones was standing there looking at him. Jones said, okay, you going to jail. He said, I'm calling the police. He said, call them. When the police came, we had some real gorillas on the police force, but when they came, the police found out before they came what it was about. They said, Jones slapped Johnny. Sister. Said, what Johnny you talking about? You know, the Johnny. They said, okay, we're going to send a team. But when the team came, the team stopped at the corner and hollered down the street. He said, Johnny, you all right? Johnny said, no, I ain't all right. If you come down here, you're going to get the same. They said, okay. So they stayed on the corner. Well, no such thing as we're going to run down there and do nothing. Now, the whole while that happened, Johnny stayed out there all day long and all night. No police, no captain, no sergeant, no lieutenant, nobody came down there to tell Johnny nothing. Because Johnny didn't have no understanding. Johnny was waiting on Jones to come out. Johnny told Jones, if you don't come out, Johnny said, I'm coming through the brick wall. Some kind of way, Jones got out the building. Johnny come through the door, crashed the door, broke the chain, everything, Jones gone. Never seen Jones, and Johnny never caught him. Jones left town. Now, when you tell me that a white boy shoots
Come on now.
A child, and we got all these people down there marching and protesting and all that.
Come on.
I don't understand
that.
I ain't never seen nothing like that before in my life. I wasn't raised like that. The men I was raised around, they told me a long time ago, they say, man, say Button. He called me Button. And I'm going to tell you something. Say, John, say, you like to fight. Say, well, you got to remember, say, don't you ever threaten another man. You don't never, ever, 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 as long as you live, ever let another man know what you're thinking. He said, can you remember them two things? I said, yeah. Can you master them two things? I said, yeah. It's okay. See, if you can remember them two things, say you got it made. So don't never threaten a man. Don't never let a man know what you're thinking. Say, now, you know you better than anybody else. And there's one saying that went all across the continent of Africa, out of the Atlantic, called Egypt, all across America, man, know thyself.
That's right.
Know thyself. But what I witnessed here in this day and age, I don't understand. I to be honest with you, I don't know how to deal with it. I had a man, I had a car accident, and I went around the car, and I messed around and turned in front of another car, and the car ran into me. Tore my car to pieces. And I got out and look, young jitterbug in the back seat, he got our cousin stuff like that. I said, man, look, I said, I'm sorry. I said, it was an accident. I said, it's my fault. I said, but what I'm going to do, I said, I'm going to push your car to the street so that we won't restrict traffic. Boy, he can't on. So I pulled his car on down the road, got out of the street. Next thing I know, here comes the jitterbug following me down the street. I'm going to whoop your so-and-so. I said, okay, well, I understand that. I said, let's roll. And after he realized that what he said was about to happen, he struck out running. I said, now, I don't understand that. Then his cousin come up. And he tell his cousin, yeah, he the one hit the car. And the cousin jumped out and popped his trunk. I said, oh, my God, I'm going to be a victim of some scare stuff. So I took out running. When I got down there, he rolled down the road and jumped out of the truck, and he had a baseball bat. There were two of them. I said, okay. I said, I understand that. I said, I can deal with that. I said, we can ride the road. I can roll with that. He swung the bat. I grabbed the bat and took it from him in order to get the bat out of the contest. And when I did, both of them struck out running. I said, what is this? I don't understand this. I don't know what to do with this. I don't understand this right here.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't never experienced nothing like this. It's two of y'all. You say you want to rock and roll. Here I go. Now, we have people, in my opinion, that has been brainwashed. I ain't never seen this kind of weakness before in my life. I don't know what to do with this. I run in the house and tell my mama, Ricky threw a rock and hit me upside my head. My mama said, what you did to Ricky? I threw the rock at him and he threw one back at me. She said, okay, well, you get on back outside and roll with the punches. But if I come in there and tell her that Ricky hit me upside the head and she asked me what I did to Ricky, and I said, I didn't do nothing. I was just sitting down, and all of a sudden, a rock hit me on the side of my head. We said, well, I'm going to go out here and straighten his eye. You innocent. But today, what we got today, I don't understand it. So I am fearful because I don't know what to do with it. So what we're going to do today is we're going to deal with this here Trayvon Martin thing, and the only thing that I can do is just tell you the things that I have experienced and the way it was handled then, and I'm pretty sure that I'm hoping that we can get something out of this stuff here today. Now, we want to deal with what is the major cause for the Trayvon Martin murder and other murders of people of African descent, both male and female, across the United States. Well, in my opinion, I learned a long time ago that if someone does something to you, and if a man slaps you and you don't do nothing, he'll slap you again. If you don't do nothing again, he'll make a habit out of it. But if he slaps you the first time and you do something about it, then things change. And the only reason I'm saying this is because this is what I experienced during my lifetime. This is all I know. I don't know anything else. This is all I know.
But if you slap you first time and you do something about it, then things change.
I've seen a man sitting up in the bed, and I saw another man walk over there and slap him in the face. And he started crying. I'm watching him. And the man that slapped him, he went down there and got a silver button, and boy, he just cried, cried, cried. Then he got up again, went over there and slapped him again. He cried, 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 cried. And he just kept doing it. And so finally, I got the brother to by myself. I said, how long you going to let a man slap you like that? Man, I don't want no trouble. You want no trouble? I said, you already got it. I said, he brought it to you about 3 or 4 times. What are you going to do? I mean, it ought to be obvious to you that if you don't do nothing, ain't nothing going to happen. So he never did do anything. And the man just kept doing it, violating him like that every day. Well, he looked at me a couple of times. I looked back at him. He didn't come slap me. I wish he would have. But anyway, my point is, if, and this is the way I see it, and if you know that we dealing with a species of people who raped you and murdered you and lit you and burned you and castrated you and beheaded you, why are you marching? Why are you holding a meeting about anything? Why are you protesting? What you looking for Jesse Jackson for? What you waiting on Al Sharpton for? I mean, I'm not telling you to go out and do anything. I'm just asking a question because I don't understand. Man come and told me when I was in high school, they said, Mandy, Mr. Flynn, hit your brother. I said, where he at? He said, oh, at the gym. I said, okay. But when I get to the gym, there was a crowd of men almost bowing down, worshiping, telling me, man, we didn't know that was your brother. We sorry. We didn't know it. I said, well, where Flynn at? They said, he right there. I said, Flynn, what happened? He said, man, I didn't know that was your brother. He said, I apologize before God. I'm sorry. I said, okay. I have a brother. I said, you all right? He said, yeah, I'm all right. So you hurt? No, I ain't hurt. I said, well, you want to try him one-on-one? No, I'm just sorry. I give him anything he want. I want to fight. I said, okay. I said, bro, is all this settled? Yes, sir. I said, okay, well, let's go on to the house then. Yeah, I do nothing about that. But this is how I was raised up. I don't know anything about when somebody do something like that to you, you hold a meeting about something. I don't understand it. Maybe I'm primitive. Maybe I'm missing something or something. I don't understand. Raised up from a different breed of cloth or something. Maybe I was raised by the wrong kind of people. I don't know. I seen the police jump out of car. And run up on Big Willie. Try to pull his pistol out before he get the pistol out. Big Willie hit him. Badge spit off his chest up in there, and the pistol slid across the concrete. So did he. And as it was all over with, he told him to go down there and get the rest of your boys and come on back. We ain't seeing no more. So this is the cage that I came out of. So when I see all this hoopla and people on TV and they raising all this sand, they having all these meetings and speaking and all that. I don't know nothing about that. That's foreign to me. I only know one thing. Something like that happened. It's two questions. Who did it? Zimmerman? Where he at? He over there. Okay. See you later. That's all I know. But anyway, let's move on. I'm going to go into the second plug here, and then we'll get into dealing with your is stating we're going to tie all this in together, okay?
As long as white supremacy is alive and well, a white man's heaven is a black man's hell. Many look, but few see, that the most unjust dynamic in the world is white supremacy. Hi, welcome back to Color Me Poetry. I'm Danny Queen. I'm here with Mr. Neely Fuller Jr., and we're discussing his book, Textbook for Victims of White Supremacy. Mr. Fuller, you have a long title here. Tell us about the title.
The United Independent Compensatory Code System Concept.
Mm-hmm.
United means that in theory or in intent, the people who are the victims of racism
mm-hmm.
and or the white people who are against the proliferation or the continued use of racism as the standard for the world's business should be united against that standard. The independent part means that each individual
mm-hmm.
has to do what he or she can to counter racism with the ultimate objective of ending it and replacing it with a thing that we loosely call justice, ultimately leading to peace, quote unquote. Now that means that you're independent. You are a independent
person. So it's not a collective effort.
It's collective in that you go to the third and fourth words, compensatory code. You become collective by using a code,
mm-hmm.
the code of compensation, making up. That's what compensatory means, making up for what's missing, right? And you have a code to make up for what is missing. What is missing is the use of truth to produce justice and correctness, which theoretically would equal peace. So you come up with a compensatory code, a way of thinking, speaking, and acting each and every day in all of the nine areas of activity. Then you use that code as an individual, wherever you happen to be, in all of those areas of activity. And right now, you don't have, it's only a concept. That's where the word concept comes in. See, it's strictly theory right now. You don't have a concept of white supremacy without the practice, because white supremacy is being practiced. A concept of the elimination of white supremacy and our racism, and our injustice, is strictly a concept. There's no such thing as justice existing anywhere
mm-hmm.
on the planet, since the definition for justice is guaranteeing that no person is mistreated. People are mistreated all over the planet all the time. So you just have a concept of justice. What you have is practical injustice. It's the difference between having a concept of justice and having it actually in practice.
Now, here you say the people of the known universe, just reading off the back, the people who have the ability to eliminate racism do not have the power to do so, and the people who have the power don't have the will or the ability to do so.
Well, that's obvious.
Mm-hmm.
If you are imprisoned unjustly, it means that you do not have the power to get out of prison because of two factors. You don't have the will or you don't have the ability. Now, those who are the victims of racism don't have the ability
mm-hmm.
because they do not have the will that provides the ability or the ability to provide the will to not be victims. Also, the racists do have the will and the ability to practice white supremacy. They have proven that.
Mm. And that's why you say that there really can't be such thing as a black racist.
No.
Because it has to do with the abilities.
It has to do with the power relationship. It has to do with something that you're actually doing.
Carrying out. Mm-hmm.
You're actually doing it. White supremacy is a fact. A lot of people do not like to admit to its existence. But any comprehensive analysis would show that such a thing does exist. So therefore, you can't have a system of black supremacy within a system of white supremacy. It's a total contradiction.
Mm-hmm. Regardless of all that has been said or done, the quality of the relationship between black and white people is, and black and white people has been total disaster.
Yes, it's a total disaster. What you mean by total is, at this particular point, it is total, because there is not a quality relationship between white people and non-white people on this planet because of the existence of the system of white supremacy. That cuts out any ability of anybody to produce a quality relationship between black people and white people. It also eliminates the possibility under the system of non-white people, black, brown, red, and yellow, interacting with each other or even with white people in a manner that is quality. By quality, we mean justice. We mean with truth. We mean doing the correct thing. You can't do it under a system of white supremacy because the system of white supremacy is based on mistreating people and having the people react to that mistreatment. So what you have is just a lot of abuse and reactions to abuse and a continuation of the same. Now, you do accomplish a lot of technical things.
Such as?
Well, such as production of building of bridges, the building of highways, the building of buildings, of schools that, by the way, support the system of white supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And all of these things are designed to do just that. It's a giant ego trip for a white person to be told that because you're white, you are somewhat substantially royal, and so you should act like it. So that's a lot of incentive. Now, a non-white person sitting, say, in a classroom setting is told directly, indirectly, within the system of white supremacy, now you are being trained to be a victim of all of this.
So are you saying that two students sitting in the same classroom can come out with, after 12 years of education, quote-unquote, can come out with completely different concepts of themselves and different concepts of the society in which they live? Even
within
though they're
the
sitting
system
in the same
of white
classroom.
Supremacy, within the system of white supremacy, it is absolutely required. In other words, the white student is being taught systematically how to be a white supremacist.
Mm-hmm.
The non-white student is being taught how to be a victim. So you have an opposite right there
in the same classroom.
Same classroom at the same time. And the
okay, ladies and gentlemen, did y'all hear that? You have to understand this thing. Did you hear that? Now, I would imagine some of the same thing occurred when I was in school, but I have to relate another story to you. First day of school, in 1971, I come from an all-black community, an all-Moorish community. We didn't have no white folks over there, Caucasians there, because there ain't no such thing as a white man. It don't exist. But we didn't have no Caucasians there. We come from all dominant. Everybody in school looked like us, teachers, students, everybody. Now, but this family had the Boston thing going on. And so we moved to a predominantly white community, and people of African descent were just moving in, but we got there in November the 22nd, 1971. And they had the school bus. You know, I had never been on school bus. I didn't need know nothing about no school bus. I walked to school all my life. Right down the street from school, right around the corner. I ain't know about that. But anyway, we ride and they take us over there. But now the first day of school, me and my two brothers, we in the dean's office. And he's trying to explain to us how to get to the classes that we're supposed to get. So he drew me a little map. And he said, you go to C wing, upstairs, room 17, that's your where you go. You go down the breezeway, go up the steps, and go through the first quarter, and then go out the back quarter and go all the way, that's B, and go to C. I said, I was following the map. I going on out of there. But when I got to the C wing, just as I got ready to go into the double doors, the doors burst open. And a brother come out of there running, like he running for his life. And I stopped and I'm looking at it and I'm wondering what's going on. I turned my back to the doors. But when I turned around, here comes this Caucasian teacher. He's a man. He grabbed me and slammed me up against the bars and said, I got you now, Ian. And when he did that, I ain't know nothing. I hit him with everything I had. Blood spattered everywhere. So did he. And after he got up and stumbled across the pavement a few times, he said, I'm taking you downstairs. I said, you taking me somewhere? Or are we going somewhere? He said, well, I want you to go with me. I said, okay, I'll go with you. So we walked downstairs, and he reached and grabbed my arm. I said, don't touch me. And we walking side by side. And when we got to the office, he went in there, and the blood running everywhere. And the dean and the boys, I just said, man, what happened to you? Say, he hit me. He said, he hit you? I said, yeah, he hit me in my nose. He said, I think he broke my nose. And he said, well, what happened? He said, well, he just stole a basketball out of the gym. He said, he stole a basketball out of the gym. He said, that's impossible. He said, he just left him no more than 3 minutes ago. He said, he don't even know where the gym at. He said, that's his mama right there. They go his brother right there. He said, you showed him. I told him, I said, it was a boy run past me, but he come out and grabbed me and told me that I stole. So I don't know what he's talking about. I said, he slammed me up against the bars. I said, I protect myself. I thought he tried to hurt me. He said, you got the wrong man. He swore up and down that he didn't have the wrong man. He said, you did get the wrong man. He said, stop bleeding all over my organs. He said, you need to go to the doctor. He said, yeah, I need to go somewhere. So they took him to the doctor. And he said, he asked me, he said, well, this is your first day of school. He said, we ain't having no trouble. Are you? I said, I don't know. It's too early to tell. I said, because I don't know what happened with him. I said, you ain't got no more around here like that, is you? He said, well, I hope not. He said, well, going on to class. I said, okay, sir. I went on to class. Now, later on, I began to learn that there was something wrong in my thinking, and the people who looked like me and the people who didn't look like me, there was something wrong between us. I never was able to figure it out. But they all had this attitude that they had to lead me and tell me and guide me somewhere. And I never understood that because I'm like, who are you? You can't guide me nowhere. You can't lead me nowhere. I don't know you. You are alien to me. I don't know the behavior that you have and the colors and stuff you wear and the colors of the pencils and notebooks and paper and stuff that you got. I don't use those colors. You're foreign to me. But I never was able to figure out what it was until today. But now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm here to tell you that it's something that I've been noticing, that all people on the planet, all cultures, embrace their own culture. Everybody embrace their own culture. Chinese people embrace the Chinese culture. Mexican people embrace the Mexican culture. Europeans embrace Europeans. Their world is a European world. But it seemed to me that something is wrong, because what we try to do, and based on what I've been looking at here lately, and actually for many years, we seem to think that we can embrace everybody else's culture instead of our own. I don't understand that. I can't understand how we're going to love everybody and put everybody first when everybody else in loving their own self and embracing their own culture. It seemed to me that the only person that's losing in a situation like that is us. We go out to a Chinese restaurant, go in a Chinese restaurant, use your girlfriend, and you look at the menu, ain't nothing up there but Chinese food. And the restaurant sitting in an all mixed community, all black community, it was seen to me that if that's going on, then in their serving that community, that you will have food on the menu that the people that you, whose community in you in, would be familiar with. But that's not the case. They bring their food from their country, that's indigenous to their culture. They embrace their own selves. You walk into the back part of the restaurant, everybody back there's doing the cooking and working, all of them Chinese. Zero unemployment. You go into the hair salon, they don't have none of your hair for sale. But none of that tells us anything about what we need to do about the embracement of our own culture. Yet we keep going through the same thing over and over and over and over again. So I just wanted to point some of that out. Now I'm going to go into the next situation here, and keep in mind all of this is designed to try to get us to understand what it was that killed Trayvon Martin. There's a system in place that we need to recognize and keep in mind every single day. It is called the global system of white supremacy. We are under the impression that the global system of white supremacy and racism is two different things. I'm here to tell you that global system of white supremacy and racism is the same thing. We're going to find that out later on in the broadcast. Now, the sister at the outset of this broadcast, she told me that about the educational system and all of that. So what we have done is we have created a library for us. Now, this library here contains valuable information for us, about us. All the nuts and bolts and wiggle pins and stuff that we were never taught or that we have forgot or we never learned is in this library for you. There's also information in there to teach you how to use what you were born with. You were born with an estate. This estate is worth millions. It is a bond. We have a manual inside of there. We have step-by-step instructions inside of there, and we're going to teach you how to access that. Now, to access this particular library, you just simply call me, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, at area code 904-303-9061, and we'll get that to you. Now, let me relate one more story to you, because this is the only way that I need to know how to deal with that. Now, I had a cousin. Now, my cousin, he was known for whooping a man. We was on the playground, and I never forget it, in junior high school. There was another brother, big old dude. His name was Allen. I ain't going to tell you the last name. But he had a habit of it so often, he'd get run around on the playground, grabbing children, picking them up in the air, and throwing them down, slamming them down on the ground. He'd run past us. We sitting on the bench, run past us, grab another little boy, and he slam him down. He come past us again, grab another boy, and slam him down. And I said, "Cuz, they say that boy they're having a seizure." He looked at me, he didn't say nothing. I said, "He ever pick you up and throw you down?" He said, "Yeah, he tried it." I said, "Well," he said, "I beat his." I said, "Okay." So I noticed that from then on. He would go into his spasm, but he never would grab his brother him. He didn't do that. And I just wanted to point that out to you. That's just something. But we got another call in. I'm going to open up this line here and see what we got here. Okay, area code 313-427. Could you tell us who you are and where you're calling from and what's your comment or question?
Steve, can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you real good, sir.
Hey, how you doing? My name is Rich. I'm calling from Detroit.
Okay, Rich. What's going on? Let us have it.
I've had you on my blog talk list for a while. I've never listened to your show, and I just happened to call in, and I heard you speaking about this, the fine on the birth certificate. And First, I want to say I've been printing off paperwork for UCC-1, been reading up on this stuff, and I'm so glad. I just wrote your number down, and I want to make sure I got the right number because I'm going to call you. You got 904-303-9061, right?
That's exactly right.
Okay, because I'm going to definitely be contacting with you concerning this because I've been looking over. I just sent for all my debt. I've one of my credit reports sent for everything. I've called the play places. I've been reading over this information because you're talking to a veteran out of Iraq. You're talking to a father of a nine-year-old, and the school money that I earned while I was serving, I really can't even tap into it because I got prior student loans from going to school. So the game is just like this. I went to go fight in war, come back trying to do the right thing. I can't get the MJIB bill, which I earned already, until I clear up this $17,000 debt.
Okay.
Now, that don't make sense.
It sure don't. I tell you what, Rick, before you jump through another hoop, give me a call after this broadcast, and we're going to lay this out for you. Matter of fact, what I'm going to do is I'm going to lay it out right now. So I'm going to put you on mute
because
it's something that you got to understand, okay? All right. Ladies and gentlemen, I want you all to listen very, very carefully. For those of you who don't have this already, I need you to send me an email to tahaka99@yahoo.com. That's tahaka99@yahoo.com. And I will send you a copy of the 14th Amendment Exposed and the Commerce Game. And I'll send it to you as an email attachment. Okay, what we need to understand is this right here. This is the bottom line. Throughout the entire United States, there's only two types of people. It doesn't have anything to do with whether you are male or female or black or white or blue or anything like that. You either a debtor or you are a creditor. Now, if you are a debtor, and this is how the court views you, that means that you're in a subservient position. Okay? We're going to show you how to stop being a debtor and show you how to become a creditor instead. When you walk in the courtroom, automatically before you open your mouth, I don't care if you've been sitting there for 5 minutes, you are automatically viewed as a debtor. We're going to show you how to quit being in that position, okay? Number one, there is no money in America. We got what's called fiat currency. Fiat currency is fake. It ain't got no gold behind it backing it up. We have a game that's being played inside the United States, and just like any game, if you do not know the rules of the game, you cannot play the game successfully. So I need you to contact me, Tahaka Amanayope, because we have created one of the most comprehensive libraries in the recorded history of the United States, and inside this library is what you need to make the necessary transformations that you have to make. You will learn about your nationality, your sovereignty. You won't have to go through spending all this money doing all this stuff on all these documents. All of it's unnecessary. You don't need all of that. You can learn about your story, your culture. You can also learn about history. We got videos in there. We got audio in there. All of this information is put there by me to help my people make the changes that they need to make and to survive this thing, okay? All right, now, let me go on to the next point because we're dealing with the Trayvon Martin murder and what killed him. Now, we know that we have in place a global system of white supremacy. Now, this system encompasses everything that we know of. Everything that we do in this life involves or connected to one of these 9 points: economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. Okay, now these things here relate to one another. Politics is related to sex and entertainment and all this stuff. Economics is related to labor. You understand me? But these things here are put in place by somebody else, and they control this system. But when we understand the rules of the game, then we can play successfully. Now, when it comes to our children and somebody killing our children down on the streets, we got to do something about that. We got to deal with that. Now, I cannot get on this national radio broadcast and tell you to go buy no weapons and go kill nobody. I can't do that. I can only tell you what I have seen, what I have experienced, and what I have witnessed. Okay? Now, let's move forward with this. Case in point, there's an area inside of Jacksonville, Florida, where I am. It's close to downtown area. I don't want to tell you where that. But any time there was a disturbance call, there was always one police officer that came to this particular giant apartment complex that handled the situation. Soon as this white man, Caucasian, get out of the car, he got his gun in his hand and a can of mace in the other hand. He ain't got no understanding. He goes, snatch the door, come out of here. Beat up the man. If the woman got a problem, he spray mace in her face. I mean, this man, you know, he just treated people like animals. He hadn't did this here kind of thing for at least 8 or 9 times. But one day, the sheriff's department got a call. There's a disturbance. Here he come. But this time, when he got out the car, he walked around the front of the car. All of a sudden, we heard the crack of a high-powered rifle from a couple of blocks away. We see him splash against the windshield of the police car. He had no head no more. That was the end. Now, after that happened, we have no more police come out there and do nothing to nobody no more. If there was a domestic disturbance, when they came out there, they were very, very professional. It was 7 or 8 cars, but everybody was very professional. And they took care of the matter. A lot of times, they didn't take nobody to jail. They just simply talked to the people. I just thought I'd throw that bit of information in there so you could hear that story, because then I can only tell you about what happened here in the state of Florida, okay, and the things that I have witnessed. But, ladies and gentlemen, don't forget, you're listening to Morris Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana El Bay. If you got Facebook, send me your friend request. I'll go ahead and grant it, because they done blocked me off of there. They say I was making friends with people I didn't know. I was always under the impression that if you didn't know anybody, you want to know them, you go ahead and try to get to know them. I didn't know there was a limit on somebody that you are supposed to do something special in order to try to get to know somebody.
5 basic words to describe what needs to be done.
Well, when you put it in the frame of reference, everyone, when they talk about racism and white supremacy, should always start by saying that the focus, the objective should be replace white supremacy
mm-hmm.
with justice. Those are the 5 basic words.
Mm-hmm.
And you start your frame of reference from that. The words are very important, because when people talk about racism,
mm-hmm.
they tend to get away from the basic focus. If you keep those 5 words in mind, replace white supremacy with justice, then you can keep focus. In many of these discussions on the matter, people tend to get into everything from feminism to words that don't have precise
communism
definition.
And everything else. They go off
yes.
on the tangent.
Yes, right.
Yeah, but this kind of locks it in.
Right. Bigotry, discrimination,
yeah.
Sexism, a multitude of isms, biracialism, whatever that means, multiculturalism.
Whatever that means.
Yes. And so you get into a myriad of words
mm-hmm.
that don't apply to the focus of what you're talking about.
Mm.
So therefore, that is the basic frame of reference that you should always focus on. That should be used by all people
mm-hmm.
who are talking about the problem as it is.
What is the tragic arrangement, or the 3 T's, if you will, and what are some of the first 2 things that must be done to establish quality relationship between white and non-white people, if you will?
Well, the 3 T's called the tragic arrangement
mm-hmm.
are tacky, trashy, terroristic. Now, this is the arrangement
okay.
that non-white people on this planet have with white people in their everyday interactions in all areas of activity.
Tacky,
trashy, trashy and terroristic, one of the three. It doesn't get any better than tacky.
Mm.
If you will observe black people, for instance, in the presence of white people on account of the way that both of them are raised
mm-hmm.
within the system of white supremacy, there is a strain there. There is not a even flow.
Okay.
So what you have is a tackiness. It doesn't get any better than tacky. It can't get any better than tacky within the system of white supremacy.
Why?
So this is all very tragic. Well, because the system of white supremacy demands that white people interact with non-white people in a certain way that is
mm-hmm.
harmful and harsh and overall destructive.
Mm.
And that the non-white people interact with the white people in the same manner. And they are taught this,
mm-hmm.
both people.
Are taught this.
Are taught this at a very early age, and then the teaching goes on every day in all nine areas of activity, economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war.
All areas of people activity.
All of the areas of people activity,
you know,
everywhere in the known universe.
You know, I noticed something. I used to work with a gentleman, elderly gentleman, and whenever he would come in contact with white people, he always had a tendency to have to be the entertainment committee to make everybody laugh. If we were on the elevator or doing something in the building, he was always the person to make white people laugh. He was always the clown.
Yes.
I always kept a straight face, so he thought something was wrong with me.
Yes, well, you can tell that there's a strain even on college campuses and whatnot
mm-hmm.
and in schools. The people will go to the classes together because that's where the classes are. That's where the teaching is. And then the students will separate themselves in the lunchroom. Now, there's a reason for that, and the reason is not healthy. It shows that something is completely, completely out of order
mm-hmm.
because if the people are sharing the same classroom and learning the same things and having the same values that are taught in that classroom, then why do not the people interact with each other in all of the areas of activity without exception in harmony?
Well, maybe they're not learning the same thing.
That is it.
Maybe they taught the same thing, but
yes,
not necessarily
that is it. Under the system of white supremacy, a black student sitting next to a white student
mm-hmm.
is being taught how to be a victim of white supremacy. The white person, the white student,
mm-hmm.
is being taught how to be a white supremacist.
And it's all in
this
the language.
This is done in the language, in
yeah.
the use of the words, in the subject matter of the materials, if the material in any way
mm-hmm.
relates to interactions between people.
Mm.
Now, the other two T's, trashy, if you try to improve on the tackiness,
mm-hmm.
then it gets trashy,
meaning
the interactions
what?
Between. For instance, you can say that in the area of religion,
mm-hmm.
Sunday morning, black people and white people do not attend the same churches.
Dr. King said the most segregated hour in America.
Right. Now, that is tacky, particularly in the area of religion. It should
mm-hmm.
not be.
Mm-hmm.
The two people should come together in the religion if in nothing else, it would seem logically speaking. But under the system of racism, since the basic teaching of the white supremacy system is that white supremacy is a religion, so you have a built-in barrier
already
against
yeah.
black people and white people sharing the same premises and preaching the same gospel and talking about loving each other and treating each other with justice. So therefore, you can't have what you call black people and white people in the same religious setting, which is why you don't have it. So what you do have, and I'd like to add this,
mm-hmm.
is the trashiness that goes on the same Sunday morning,
mm-hmm.
and that is maybe in the houses of prostitution,
mm-hmm.
in the houses of dope dealing. Then you will have black and white together.
That's the only
same day
place.
On Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's interesting that you would say that, because you have these two groups, and we both say we're Christians. We have white Baptists, then we have black Baptists, and we're supposed to be worshiping the same God, if
yes,
you will.
Yes, one in Christ, they often say.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that not even many black people care to explain. that they say we are, you know, in Christ there is no east, no west, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yet, the black people and the white people cannot sit down in the same bench in a church.
I find it interesting, speaking of religion, that you could have Billy Graham come to town and all the black ministers start bowing down. Minister Louis Farrakhan comes and there's controversy.
Well, that is because of the race issue.
Mm-hmm, as well.
It's always because of the race issue. You can't do anything. You can't straighten out anything in religion or any of the nine areas of activity without first eliminating racism. And here again, there's only one functional form, and that is white supremacy.
Mm-hmm. What should be used as a role model for replacing white supremacy?
The role model for replacing white supremacy
mm-hmm.
should be a code of thought, speech, and action, not a person, never a person. And that also applies to producing justice throughout the world, which justice has never been produced as far as anyone who is existing now knows anything about. We don't know what justice would be like. We don't know what peace would be like.
Yeah.
Never had it. So in the process of producing justice, you need a role model, and that role model has to be a prescription. Some ministers have said in the beginning there was the word. Now, that certainly applies also to straightening out race problems. You have to have the words. The words are not correct. Hardly any of the words are correct. The words are designed to support racism. And this is why you have the confusion you have in the schools.
Deceit.
Yes, the deceit. See, the words are designed to support deceit, which is the basic tool of the white supremacists.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay. That was some very, very powerful information. And Dr. Neely Fuller laid it out for you. You have to understand that there is something that's going on the planet. And you have to understand how to counteract that thing. And the way you do that is you're going to have to refurbish your mind with the correct information, okay? Now, I have cable, in my house. But anybody that knows me that comes to my house will tell you they don't ever remember coming here seeing it. I got it, but I ain't seen it. Now, what I do see is what I put on my TV myself, because that is something that I control, and that is what goes on and is recorded by my brain. Because whatever is recorded by the brain, the brain is going to pick it up, and that's what's going to come out. I know a great deal now about my own story, about my own culture. I can run it straight off the top of my head. I'm not confused when someone does something to one of my loved ones. I'm not confused about it at all, in no kind of way, whatsoever, in no shape, form, or fashion, because of the control and the stuff that I have went through during my lifetime and dealing with what I have to deal with. Now, when you control your thoughts and your thought processes, then you are able to act in a fashion that you can deal with. You understand what I mean, ladies and gentlemen? Now, when that happens, you have to make sure that you are in a position to exercise what authority you have. But it's based on what you allow to be picked up by your brain. What experiences have you had during your lifetime and growing up, because these are the resources that you're going to have to draw from. Just like I told you earlier, most of the stuff that I'm seeing among young men and stuff today, I don't understand. I see two men are arguing with one another. He says something that this man here didn't like. He's trying to dish me. He's shining on me. I'm finna go get my boys, and we gonna go around the corner, and we gonna start shooting. I don't understand that. I ain't never experienced nothing like that. I never forget. I remember when the lady who lived down the street from us, she had a brother. Her brother, this man here, had killed seven men and never went to prison for none of the murders in his life. His sister come and told him that her husband had did this, that, and the other. And I was standing right there on the porch listening to him. And she was standing telling her brother what the man had did. But he kept asking one question. What did he do? Well, he was talking to the top of his voice. He was screaming to the top of his voice. And he did this and he did that. He said, well, did he hit you? No, he ain't hit me. Okay. Well, what's the problem? Well, I'm just trying to tell you, he jumped up and turned the table over. He said, oh, okay, who bought the table? Well, he bought the table. It was his table. Well, whose house is it? It's his house. I live here with him. But that's not the point. The point is he threatened me, and he threatened to do this again. And the man asked him one more time, what did he do to you? Well, he haven't done, he didn't put his hands on me. But what I'm trying to tell you is, he did this, that, and the other. He said, well, look, I've asked you over and over, what did the man do? And you ain't told me nothing about what this man did to you. This man has not physically harmed you. Okay? He has not put his hands on you. So now I'm at a loss to try to find out what is it that you want me to do. I want you to get on him. Because the way he was carrying on and hollering and shouting and nodding and bumming all through the house and stuff, he was scaring the children. So he said, well, look, I'm going to ask you one more time. What did he do to you? Well, he didn't put his hands on me at all. Okay, well, I'll see you later. But now, what the reason I'm relaying the story is because I have seen men who have physically beat up women about something they said. I don't understand that. I ain't never experienced that growing up. I have seen a woman cuss a man out so bad till everybody standing around listening to it was laughing. And then after the man got ready to walk away, she really embarrassed him. She said, and stop twisting. And when she said that, he turned around and run back and slapped the woman. In my opinion, I think it was uncalled for because she hadn't physically done anything to him. She didn't put his hands on him. Now, even if she had her, the average woman can't whoop no man no way. So what you gonna beat up for? And I was always told that this is just me, and like I told you already, I might be a dinosaur or obsolete or whatever. The men that I was raised around, you know, I've seen women fussing. That's all they gonna do anyway. They fuss and cuss and raise sand and all of that. But I didn't know nothing. It was never nothing where no man gonna just get up and physically beat up on a woman. I'm not familiar with that. Now I have seen men beat up women, but in my opinion, I physically think they were wrong. You know, now I'm 57 years old. I'm a bachelor. I live on my own. I date women, but there's no woman that ever come here that ever told you that I beat them up about nothing. Because I'm a better man than that. And they get mad with me. We might not have an agreement about something. They might say, "Well, I'm going home." I said, "Okay, well, let me show you where the door at, so you can go on about your business." But it's not gonna be no situation where we gonna have no fight. I'm not gonna beat you up and throw you out of there. And the reason why, because I don't understand that. And just like I'm trying to relate the story to you about Trayvon Martin, there's a way to handle things, a man to handle things, and a way, one who's less than a man handle things. Now, a man that's less than a man, he's a coward. Now, I was always taught, if you're going to do something, especially if you're going to war, if you got a man in your ranks or in your group that's a coward, you got to get rid of him, because a coward will get you killed. I learned that. I even seen it with my own eyes. Matter of fact, case in point, two brothers. Okay, they ain't blood brothers, but they always hang out. They going around robbing people. They doing all kind of manner of evil and wickedness. But one night they gambling, and one man he supposed to do one thing on the dice, but it came up a whole different way. Anyway, the brother pulled out his pistol, put it to the boy's head, and pulled the trigger. But the pistol didn't go off. He didn't have a shell in the chamber, and it didn't go off. And the boy struck out running. But now the next day, I wake up in the bed. I heard about the situation. I wake up in the bed. I hear four shots from what I know for a fight with a 12-gauge pump shotgun. Four rounds. Boom, 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 boom. I get up, I get in the car, I'm going up to the store. Police swing out in front of me. All right, now, right behind him, here come the other boy. He behind the police. They go over in the drive-in, so I follow him up in there, I look, and they open the door, and here he go. He fall out of the car, with his head blow almost off, and he got killed. So I go get his brother. And I take his brother around there, and his brother sees him that his brother got himself killed. Now, I found out that I said, okay, well now, this other brother that was with him, how could he get killed if there's two of them and there's one of the men that's doing the shooting? Come to find out, when the boy come out of the house with a 12-gauge shotgun, both these other brothers had guns. But one of them ran and left the other one trying to defend himself. Coward. Got him killed. Now, I'm only relaying these messages to you all so that you will understand what I'm trying to tell you about what I have seen and what I experienced and what I've understood. Okay? And I just want to put that information out there for you. Now, we're going to go into one more segment.
JohnTaborRadio.com, the world's greatest radio, and this is the way radio should be heard. You're in with the Compensatory Concept with your co-host, Stephen Allen, and Mr. Neely Fuller. Mr. Fuller, good morning. How are you today?
I'm still learning.
Still learning. It is a motto that I am now learning to live by. I get to talk about you every week to my friends and the experiences and conversations I get to have on the radio with you every week. So I'm going to leave it up to you. Let's pick it up from last week. Where were we last week when we left the people? You gave me so much information, as I told you. I was going to leave the program and start running through the streets and talking to my friends and sharing with them some of the things you were able to break down for me. So I want to pick up there. We were talking about racism and the effect of our take on how to deal with one another moving forward, and whether or not racism has affected our dealings with one another, if we're racist with one another. And so I want to pick up back there. And last week you told me about the discomfort that was placed in our way that put us in a position to start striking out at one another and to versus seek out the person who was oppressing us to oppress one another. And I want to complete that thought by asking you this week, if that was the conditions that made us start to distrust and not deal with one another, what could be the reversal if we acknowledge and recognize it? You said that it can't happen, that people don't even recognize or can't even and get the idea of where it all started. But if they did recognize it and we recognize that we shouldn't be striking out to the person next to us, but the oppressor that put us in this position, what would we have to do to start to implement that idea? Because everything that we talk about sounds like at some point we'd have to contemplate the idea of going to war or some form of aggressive scenario in order to rid ourselves of these issues of this type of racism.
Well, the book that I've written, The United Independent Compensatory Code System Concept, which is a textbook workbook for thought, speech, and or action for victims of racism, which would mean the people on the planet who are classified as non-white. And, of course, racism would be defined as the system of white supremacy. That's the only form of functional racism. There are some ideological forms of racism, meaning there are people who have racism in their minds who are non-white, but they are not racist because they are not functioning as racist. You can't be subject to racism and be a racist at the same time. It doesn't compute. So the focus is on the system of racism, which is the system of white supremacy. And one of the actually the first statement in the book, on one of the cover pages on the inside of the book, of the textbook for victims of white supremacy, is, if you do not understand white supremacy, what it is and how it works, everything else that you understand will only confuse you. Now, what that means is the people who are just getting up every day and trying to go to work or trying to look for a job or trying to do whatever it is they're trying to do, if they're classified as non-white, the first order of business is they're going up against a system of white supremacy. And because so many of them are so in proximity to each other, that's the victims, that is, the non-white people, and they are all crowded together under the system of white supremacy, when they don't get the things that they have to have or the things that they think that they have to have or the things that they need, they have a natural tendency to lash out at each other. So the counteraction for that is to understand that it's the system of white supremacy that causes this. These people, if they all had all of their needs met, particularly their needs, not so much their wants, because a lot of their wants have been manufactured by the white supremacists. But their needs, the things that they need most, that would be of constructive value, they can't get these things unless they get them from the white supremacists. Nobody else has these things. Nobody else has these things. They have to get whatever they need from the white supremacists in the way of material support, because that's what supreme means. It means that you have set up a system based on color and non-color, and that you have gathered everything of value around yourself, and then you dole it out to the victims that you have taken it from as you see fit. But you only dole it out just by throwing a piece of bread, you might say, to a crowd of extremely hungry people. You throw this off of a balcony. I'll give that as an illustration. Every now and then, a piece of bread that comes sailing over the balcony. And there are 10 million people out there who haven't eaten in 6 months, or say, well, 6 days anyway. No bread, no water, nothing. They're extremely hungry.
Right.
So wherever that bread lands, the rest of the people are going to crowd around the site of where that bread landed.
Right.
And whoever grabs the bread is going to have a fight on his or her hands.
Absolutely. So the question becomes, after we acknowledge and recognize the system of how it works, at any point, because I just want to be clear on the understanding, I've been wrestling with a number of different concepts and ideas as it applies to a resolve and dealing with the racist agenda. And I think that the one most unrealistic thing that people of color can consider, being that of a spiritual people, is to consider any form of war. And when I say war, I don't mean the type of war where systematically, we find a way to rebel and fight and shoot at the government, because that's a no-win situation. But on a CD that I have, Bob Marley made a statement that we'd have to win with a higher spiritual conscious, and that would be that if we do it the way that would be prescribed by the system of white supremacy that we currently live under, that the intent would be to go fight again and kill again, and you can't justify murder to humanity through that type of aggressive action under any circumstance. So the or the idea that he spoke about implementing was based on the idea of a higher conscious, a higher value, a higher power within ourselves that allows us to, I guess, inevitably change the enemy's mind without ever having succumbed to his vicious way of resolve. And I'd like to know what you would think about that type of resolve after a full recognition of the circumstances that we for so many years blinded ourselves to or chose to ignore. Can we approach this concept or this idea of reversing this sickness by entertaining the idea of going to literal war, or should it be a mental war?
Well, it's war all the time anyway. We're in a war, because
Right. Racism
is war.
Right.
So we need a system of counter war, which is what we don't have.
Mm.
Racism is the war. That's in capital letters. There's only one war on the planet. That's the war between the people who believe in white supremacy and the people who don't. All of the so-called wars are battles within that war, even when they don't appear to be, even when they don't appear to have anything to do with racism. That's all it is. War is just conflict between people on a massive scale, on a significant scale, meaning when people are dying, either from starvation or whatever, or killing each other outright with rifles and swords, etc. That's war. Anytime someone is trying to do you harm, that's war. The white supremacists are the supreme war makers.
That doesn't answer the question for me. The question is, again, I clearly hear you, that we are at war in a literal sense of the word. Anytime, like you say, oppression exists, but now when we contemplate moving forward with an awakening, because I can honestly say through our conversations, it amazes me that in the city where I live, if you really stood back and listened to the conversations of the people, there's a unanimous lack of understanding for the conditions and not so much an an idea to challenge, but an idea to just go, man, there is something so desperately wrong that something has to be done. I don't know exactly what, but something has to be done. So if we find a way to get people to start to listen to this programming on a larger scale and get more people involved, we would have an advantage. But the question becomes if they start to do that. And I just want to be clear on the concept of war. Are we still talking about contemplating trying to fight what we already know is a superior enemy based on his ability to gather all the materials, resources, have extorted every land on the face of the continent and of the world, that, of that matter, have taken every natural resource for their own power? Is it still a reasonable concept to believe or to contemplate that we should be considering the idea of some type of material war where we say, okay, we know that white supremacists aren't just going to say, okay, you're right, you guys figured this out, you know, this code we've been running on you, what took so long? You guys are pretty slow on the draw. Like, even if that was the idea scenario, and we know they're not going to do that, so do we have to, in our minds, prepare ourselves for some type of physical war that would involve casualty, loss of life, and things of the nature where, at this point, from the position where I sit in society, there is it's a no-win situation, the people against the people that we've allowed to take so much power, so much money, so much control. So I'm asking you directly, do we still have to contemplate the idea of physical war in order to start to get a resolve of white supremacy?
Yes, but by physical war, see, we have to describe the words that we use precisely. By physical war, everything is physical. If you're in a war, everything is a physical war and a mental war. So what you have is nine areas of activity: economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war itself. However, war, if you're born in a war, that will take in all of these other areas of activity: economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, and sex. So how do you go about fighting this war? Through the law of compensation, meaning making up for what's missing. Now, how do you make up for what's missing? Well, these are the details that you work out day by day as you go along. Now, the first law of compensation in counter-racist compensation is you ask for what should be given. Let's get to the practical stuff. You ask. Now, whom do you ask? You don't ask other black people. They don't have anything. You're asking the incorrect people. That includes even the black people who go and stand in front of a grocery store and ask for handouts, ask for a quarter, a dime, and whatnot, and they're asking black people. Black people don't have anything. You're asking the incorrect people. They're in the same shape you're in. They might be in a little better shape individually, and because every person that you meet coming down the street, each person that you meet may have 15 cents more than the other person standing next to them. But that's not real. That's not the source of where all of this comes from. Because before I can give somebody a dollar, I have to get a dollar. Now, where do I get the dollar? I get it from the white supremacists, either directly or indirectly. So black people have to learn to go to the source. If I was, go among the white people. Now, when you do this, it's going to be very annoying. I'm talking about this practical situation, a black person who doesn't have anything and who is on the streets of Sweden or Denmark or Cincinnati or Berlin or wherever. The person doesn't have anything, doesn't have a place to go, doesn't have a place to stay. You go to what we used to say when we were in grade school, go to the getting place. The getting place always on this planet is with someone who is white in the system of white supremacy. That's where you get everything that you're going to get that's worth anything or worth having. Why? Because under the system of white supremacy, everything has been garnered by the white supremacists. Everything of value has been taken up. has just Venus made a big sweep around the planet and picked up everything of value and put it right in their vault.
Now I have to ask you, does
okay, ladies and gentlemen, I think that was some very, very insightful information, and it's some very important things that we need to consider. However, remember, I told you that we do have our own talents and stuff, and we can generate our own income based on the talents that we have. Now, I'm a firm believer that the only reason one man will get a job working for another man is to acquire seed capital for investment so that he can eventually get in position so that he can provide jobs for others. You do not go get a job in order to get brand new rims to put on your car. You don't go get a job working for another man in order to get Christmas toys for your children. You don't go get a job in order to buy a brand new outfit to go to the club or to get new hair and nails to go out to try to catch a man. That's not the reason you do that. The only reason for you to get a job is to acquire seed capital to investment in your own company, in your own business. That's your reason for being there. So now, if you go there to get a job with that in mind, then you won't it won't be so hard on you. You won't be so sad about going to work and so upset about it because you're there for a specific purpose, a specific aim, and a specific objective, and a specific goal. I mean, and the reason I'm saying this is because it worked well for me. That's what I did. I found a specific job that was paying a specific amount of money. Now, the first day I got there, the only thing that I wanted to know is how much overtime can I have, and how much will I get paid for working this overtime. They told me, they said, you can have all the overtime you want. I said, how much you pay? They said, we're going to pay you time and a half. We're going to pay you double time on the weekend. I said, okay. In less than 3 months, I had everything I wanted, car, houses, and you name it, because I was on a mission. Then I opened up my own company. Then I had men coming to me, want to work for me. And then the job that I was working on, they said, well, you making more money working for yourself than you is making him. Some weeks you don't even you forget to even pick up your check. I said, well, maybe so, but I ain't forgot it. I just put them on the pile. I'll come in and give them. I said, how much more overtime you got? Because I ain't through getting what I got to get because I came in here on a mission. So when I go to work, I'm excited about being there because I know that I'm involved in something that I'm going to use to accomplish what I'm going to accomplish. Ladies and gentlemen, we're coming to the end of this broadcast, and I hope that we have shed some light on some things. And I have been your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay. And don't forget, if you got Facebook or Twitter or MySpace or Black Planet or whatever, go ahead and hit me up. Now, keep in mind, I've been locked out of Facebook, so send me your friend request so I'll grant it. That way we can get access to Mawal and our different Tahaka's Institute, Tahaka's Moorish America Group, or what have you, and get your education on. And don't forget, we've created one of the most comprehensive libraries inside the United States. And the way you access that is simply by contacting me, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, at area code 904-303-9061. And we get that to you. Also, we are offering our free reports again, the Commerce Game, and How to Play, and the 14th Amendment Exposed. And you just simply send me an email to tahaka99@yahoo.com. That's T-A-R-H-A-K-A 99@yahoo.com. And I'll rush that to you as an email attachment. So we're going to get on out of here. And those of you who have the library already, give me a call so we can move forward into going into the area of dealing with your Social Security so we can get you using that your estate letter in order to get that. You know what I'm talking about. So go ahead and hit me up out of area code 904-303-9061. Okay? Ladies and gentlemen, until next time.
Make a bag, get up. Yeah. Make a bag. baby wobble, baby wobble.
Yeah.
Wobble, baby wobble, baby wobble, baby wobble.
Yeah.
Wobble, baby wobble, baby wobble, baby wobble.
Get it now. Yeah, yeah. Get it now.
Get up.